Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
And welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. Well, we got some things here to talk about on Leaving the Ring Radio. You want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app to your iPhone or Android so you can catch up with the other shows that we have hosted on the app. Anyways, first off, there was a passing of somebody that was a major figure in boxing, a promoter and a friend to a lot of folks. Definitely was a really nice guy to me when I came on board as part of the media community, and received me with open arms. Him and his whole family, his son, especially Craig Goosen. So the passing of Dan Goosen was a big shock. Not just to myself, but to a lot of folks out there, man. I mean, you know, this was really sudden. Dan getting cancer and finding out just a matter of days he had left, and he left this world. But he left this world leaving it with a real impact, and an impact in a lot of people's, you know, lives, you know. And like everybody else, you know, Dan Goosen was not perfect, but he was definitely somebody that was always willing to sit in front of you and argue his point or listen to what you had to say. He was never really afraid to shy away from that. Definitely, if you speak to anybody, if you've been active on the social media, you've noticed a lot of folks and guys that are in the business and media and whatnot, managers and matchmakers, always mention how if you couldn't get a hold of Dan Goosen with the first call, don't worry because he was going to return your call. And that was something he was really really known for. And, you know, another thing, too, is that he was always known. If you've talked to him maybe once or twice, he was pretty good in remembering maybe not your name, but he would remember, you know, that where what position you were at, you know, meaning whether if you're a matchmaker, manager, even a fighter to all the way down to the little guys like myself, media. And the one thing that he had a habit of always calling me was kid. He would say, you know, the last time I spoke to him was in Southern California. And, I had asked him if I can get a quick interview with him. And this was off of Chris Oriola on the comeback and Andre Ward and versus Arthur Abraham. And he said, he had said to me, I always got time for you, kid. I always got time for you. And that always stuck with me, and it always stuck with a lot of the guys too, as well. Because, like I said, he not just Dan himself, but the whole family, everybody that was, you know, part of that family, were always willing and wanting to talk to you. So this was a great loss for the boxing community. It was a shocker. It was definitely a shock to me. Shock to a lot of other folks that I spoke to about. And he's going to be greatly missed. And here on Leaving the Ring, we want to wish his family all the best. But like every great titan, you may be gone, but you're never going to be forgotten. So much love to you, Dan Goosen, and thank you for all the fights and all the things you've done for the boxing world. Anyways, let's get down to it here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I believe we got my co-host, Mr. Montoya, with us. Gabo, are you out there?
Yeah, man. Can you hear me on the Skype?
Oh, I can hear you all right, buddy.
It was really eloquent, Dave. You know, I don't want to like make it about me, but I think death kind of has that effect. You know, it personalizes it. And when you lose somebody, you know, one, you become acutely aware of the things that you have, how fleeting they are, how precious they are. But you also, you know, you have those regrets of Dan and when I lost Emmanuel as well. We all lost Emmanuel. I had the same feeling that I just, you know, I should have pushed a little bit harder. I should have kept that friendship going constantly. and not have lapses where, you know, and literally 2 days before I found out that he was gravely ill, I said to myself, yeah, I haven't talked to Dan in a while. I should give him a call. And then I got busy with something. You know, I've just kind of stayed out of boxing these last few months. And then lo and behold, you know, I was able luckily to get a message through to him, let him know how I felt. But, you know, Dan was, he's the first promoter. And really, I think he really let you in right off the bat. And some people say, oh, that's just a, you know, promoter's tactic. But at this point right now, you know, I'm just doing these radio shows. I don't know what I'm going to do in terms of my boxing writing. So I'm just not even going to worry about it. I'm going to be just like I've always been, just open and honest. And Dan he was just different than a promoter. Sure, there was times when he was selling you something. You know, we kind of went round and round when Paul Williams had Martinez move down to 158. He got kind of pissed at me for going after them on a conference call. He certainly, you know, there was just things, but that was natural. But Dan didn't hold it against you. He was kind of one of the last of those guys that felt like, you know, the press and him should have a drink so that we understood each other. Not necessarily so that he would win us over better, but so that we could see that the other guy's human. Because I think and this has been universally said, I think, the one thing about Dan was that he made his business and his family kind of one thing. He was surrounded by his family and his business. He treated people that he cared about like family. And, you know, I would call him in the mornings. I learned early on in Los Angeles, my journey there, that Dan would be at his office at like 7 a.m. and answering his own phones. And so I would call him in the morning, and because I worked a job where I would get off at 7 a.m. So I'd be driving home and give him a call and see what's up. And he was very encouraging. He you know, was cool about the fact that I was chasing a dream and was respectful that I wanted to do it like a professional and sometimes have to ask things that would piss him off. But every call, the thing that I would take away is that he wouldn't just let me barrel into business. I had to share something, and it wasn't have to be deep, but it was just kind of, can we talk about the weather a minute? Can we talk about how we're doing? And remember that there's things that are way more important than just business in this world. For that, I'll ever be forever grateful. And that we didn't have more times like that, I'll forever regret.
Yeah. You know, one thing about Dan Goosen is if you didn't have a chance to meet him and his big personality, you definitely weren't going to miss him because of his outfits. You know, if you really think about it, Dan was a guy that was a promoter that kind of needed a niche. And I don't think it was a niche. This was really his style. Even when you talk about Joe Goosen, that's their unique style. But if you look at it, like, you know, you had Don King with the big hair. You had Bob Arum with the attorney look. And Dan needed to fit somewhere. And he found very colorful suits to stand out as a promoter. But, you know, like I said, we want to wish all the best to his family. Obviously, they got... Yeah, they got, you know, their funeral is next week too. If any folks want to be out there in Southern California, his funeral is next week. It's on Tuesday, I believe. And I tweeted it out. There you go.
St. Francis. I'll pull it up here pretty quick. I've got my email just available because yeah, it would be nice to let folks know and it just, you know, boxing's a trip. You know, you do get. It is a bit of a fraternity. It is a bit of a club. I probably covered more Dan Goosen press conference than I would think. If not as many, you know, press conferences as anybody else. And his had a different feel because they were always in places like Sicily's Italian Restaurant or Morton's Steakhouse. They weren't quite, you know, like the big ballroom at the Beverly Hills Hotel the way Bob Arum does it. They're a little more, you know, close up and friendly. I always remember that, like that what you posted, that video. You know, I was there at that press conference, and I just remember the hell that he gave that poor translator who was just trying to be there for Arthur Abraham, and it was so funny. It was like
Dan was
doing this comedy routine on our side, and like on their side, they were like, no, they just weren't getting his sense of humor at all, and it made it even funnier. The funeral services for Dan Goosen will be held on Tuesday, October 7th, beginning at 6 p.m. Pacific time at St. Francis de Sales That's 13360 Valley Heart Drive in Sherman Oaks, California. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation in Dan's memory to the charity he established to honor his late brother, the Craig Goosen 64 Scholarship Fund at Notre Dame High School. And checks can be made payable to NDHS Goosen Fund and mailed to NDHS 13645 Riverside Drive, Sherman Oaks, California, 91423. They can also be made online donations at www.ndhs.org. All the gifts are tax deductible. And the Goosen family will be notified of all contributions. Once again,
you
know, just the 10 count. Rest in peace, Dan.
Rest in peace, Dan. Now let's get down to boxing here. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. You had just last night the Wednesday special on ESPN. Then you had the announcement of main events. Their contract with NBC is it's ending. So Al Haymon has reportedly has made a bid for it, and it looks like he got the dates locked down. $20 million, I think, is what's been reported that he outbid it. He put the bid for to get in a business relations with NBC. So that's something there in big news. Hey, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. We're going to talk about the ESPN Wednesday Night Fights. We're going to talk about upcoming weekend fights. And we're going to talk about, there's a lot of visiting at the Golden Boy office from their fighters that are not signed by Al Haymon. So there's something that'll scratch your head. What is that all about? Well, I'll give you my opinion, and certainly my co-host will give you your opinion. We're going to open up the phone lines in a few minutes here. Again, it's 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app so you can catch up with the other shows that we have hosted on the mobile app. You know, we never miss out on Boxeo Tijuana Radio and the next round. But let's get on in on it. Okay, Al Haymon here. Let's rewind here a bit, Gabriel. As us Chicanos like to say, we don't say it, just back up. We always say, let's rewind. Hey, rewind that real quick. Anyway, so.
But the clicker, where's the clicker?
Right. Now, if you've been listening to Leaving the Ring for quite some time, you know about our Monday rants, you know about some of the stuff that we kind of hone on and we bring up and touch on where other folks just won't even get close to with a 16th pole. Okay, they want to stay clear from it, because they want to stay in the graces with everybody. Where in our case, it really doesn't matter, because it's our job to talk about things, because it's something that you end up talking about at a barbecue, at a bar, at a poker game, or anywhere that you have a chance to talk to another boxing head, right? So these are subjects that some fight fans just, when I have a chance to talk to either through social media or run across, they'll ask me some questions. They're like, hey, what do you think about this old Al Haymon thing? Now, if we go back, and we're talking about a year from here, okay? We had been mentioning that there was a monopoly that Al Haymon was trying to do. And just like last week, we mentioned Oscar De La Hoya woke up, he cleaned up, and he caught on to some stuff that was going on in his company, okay? What I've been told and what I've heard from numerous people is the plan was to sell out the company, okay? And then the other plan was to really exile all the other networks and start to have a monopoly by having one sole channel. With the NBC deal and now the talks that it might, you know, that the dying of Showtime, which would be Al Haymon no longer hosting fights because he's now looking at trying to get on the NBC. Well, that's the ripple. That's the start of it. Okay. Was it the way originally how they wanted to get it done? Absolutely not. When Oscar woke up and took off those shades, which you shouldn't wear shades in a club, I always thought that was really weird when I see guys do that. You know what I mean?
It depends on the shades, Dave. You know, I used to agree with you, but now that I've been living in San Francisco for a while, it depends on the shades and the time of year, I think. I think Golden Gate Gabe Montoya.
Right. It's a big fashion no-no, Gabriel. Notice when we went out that one night when I was down there, when I went and sat down and you kept walking around. See, there was a reason behind it. I'm just playing. No, I'm just kidding. Anyways, all right, so let's talk about this. So Oscar wakes up and he sees what's going on. And he's like, whoa, hold up, rewind. See, that's a Chicano word that we say. Rewind, what's happening here? What am I signing, right? And he caught on to it. And guess what? He put a roadblock to the original plans. And then the domino was the effect of, like, Main Event suing. There was also, what was the other one that was suing Al Heyman? It was something Dog Promotions. I don't know if you remember off the top of your head, Gabriel. But we have it on the website. I have to go back and look. But it was another promotional group as well that decided to sue him.
I'd have to pull it up. I am remiss.
Yeah, I can't.
It's okay. It was a company that I didn't even really realize exists. I'll be honest and say.
And so then what happened is then Schaefer resigns, and then Floyd Mayweather puts his foot in his mouth again. I don't know. God, I'm surprised when the guy talks, he doesn't smell like toast. But all this stuff happened. Then we had said that what's going to happen is Oscar's going to end up mending that relationship with HBO. He was definitely trying to mend it with Top Ranks, which it looks like it's headed down that route. And now the relationship's back with Oscar and HBO. And then the big move, which was going to be the power move, is to get Saul Canelo Alvarez, the Mexican superstar, back to HBO. Then through that divorce was going to start coming down to the children. And one of those children were going to be dates. And we see that what's going on there. The second one we haven't really seen yet is fighters, because there are fighters that are signed with Heyman and Golden Boy. So we don't know the tug of war there yet. That's soon to start, believe me. I think within the new year of 2015, we're going to start seeing some tug of war, conflict of interest, just with the fighters themselves, because they're going to see right now, like I said, the mention of HBO fighters, Golden Boy fighters going to the office to speak to Golden Boy promotion is really because the renewed relationship with HBO. Here's these guys that really were kind of put in the back burner because Al Heyman and Schaefer made sure they took care of their signed fighters first. They weren't concerned about what Oscar and them were doing, kind of put them behind. So now I think this is what the movement is, to start filling up those dates and those cards with some guys that weren't really getting those that push. So you're going to be able to see some guys we normally wouldn't see on a cable network. Now, going back with the Monopoly, and me and Gable talked a little bit about this, and he's going to jump in on it and give his opinion just a short bit, this is the start. You go to NBC, you start putting on these fight cards on here, and you really see you know what? Before I even get into that, Gable, go ahead and throw in your opinion so that I can kind of piggyback right off of that, because we talked about something really that I think needs to be mentioned. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, that was Bad Dog Productions that's suing Al Heyman. That was right around the same time as Main Events, but it didn't really get as much run, and they were suing over Rancis Bartholomew. One of the things that Steve and I talked about this on the Next Round this week, Steve brought up that Al's, you know, it's 24 dates. Four of them are going to be prime time. One of them rumored to be after the Super Bowl. This is per Mike Coppinger of Boxing Scene, just to give attribution. Who was doing an interview with Kathy Duva just a few weeks after getting kind of taken to school by Nicole Duva regarding their business practices. But I mean, this is how you learn, by asking questions. And I think Mike shook something loose, in this Heyman story. We knew a little bit about it, but we didn't know the specifics, at least according to Duva. It's just interesting where, you know, what I've heard is that it's even going further and going to kind of looking ahead in the next 5 years, where everybody's using their cable and their computers just as one. And we're getting closer and closer to that. You see people with, like, you know, Chromecast, and so, like, their laptop or their tablet is just hooked up directly into their giant big screen TV. And I think Al is getting that there's going to be kind of a new market and a new way to pay for channels and to pay for programming. And I think that's where we're headed, ultimately, in the next 5 years. There's something kind of along the lines of the UFC. This is what Steve alluded to, that he would create his own belt and his own league, essentially, with all this talent. And, you know, if you keep paying for the talent this way, and it's your universe, and you can kind of grow the culture yourself to control it. I mean, look at the way the UFC is doing it. They're even now doing their own drug testing. I don't know how effective that they're being at, or how correct they're getting their science. But that's, you know, we don't want to turn it into the PED hour. And I don't want to jump to conclusions like some of the other people out there already are. But in this case with Heyman, and it's interesting actually, the people that call bull on the, you know, this whole Kung Lee, Victor Conte, Vada, all that stuff, that always just have the jaundiced eye. These guys are the same guys that said Al Heyman didn't have any power just a couple of years ago, that he didn't really have much influence in boxing. So when you listen to them, just know, you know, on the opinion scorecard, at least they're 0-1 there. I think ultimately, you know, it's hard to say what we're going to get out of this. Oscar is really firm in his commitment. It's strange what's happening right now. You've got Al trying to monopolize the business, or at least a large section of it, and break off now even from the networks, as the interview said, and kind of cut HBO and Showtime out of the deal and go back to network TV, where we could do bigger advertising dollars, presumably, and potentially a larger audience for boxing. But then you're going to have the old guard, and taught by the old guard, Oscar De La Hoya, and the old guard being Bob Arum, and the taught by being, you know, Todd DeBuff, carrying on the old tradition of fighting for dates on Showtime and HBO and kind of cultivating, well, really, they're just going to be on HBO, and Oscar's going to hope to work at both. Oscar's looking for unity, Oscar's and Al's looking for separatism and isolationism. It's kind of a strange thing. I mean, Oscar did change his tune from a few years ago, which is another interesting thing. But you know what? Unlike other people in this business, I afford people the ability to change and to learn from their mistakes, or just learn from, you know, their experiences. It doesn't always have to be mistakes.
You know, here's the thing that's interesting to me, okay? And this is where it gets risky, in my opinion. Now, does Heyman have money to back up what he's trying to do? Absolutely. But that monopoly, or that way of thinking of trying to have one sole channel to host boxing, has been attempted by other sports, and they haven't been successful at it. You know, speaking of like WWE to even to the UFC. But the thing with me is what I believe is even more riskier is there's really not a name developed from Heyman. And the name that is developed is Floyd Mayweather. And to think of it, Floyd hasn't been doing great by numbers. He's been struggling as well. Not in terms of what's being received in his pocket, but what are you're perceiving in the seats. That's something that's completely different. Where Golden Boy, like it or not, which we did it in the beginning, and we've had like Robert Alexander that come on the show, and he said this perfect. He said they developed a great product, but they haven't took time to develop a fighter yet. Which slowly but surely it's kind of a turn. I don't know about the whole Joshua Kalati thing. That's kind of a woo. Now how do you go from Laura to that? But Golden Boy, in terms of building a brand, which they now have in Canelo, they absolutely, to me, are a little step ahead in the game of what direction and what fans are going to go sailing towards at the end of the day. So this is something that the Heyman Entertainment Group people, they got to start looking into and thinking about. Now, they are signing up tons of talent, but it's what they do with that talent, how they market that talent, and how they move them through the rankings and through those ropes is what's really going to count. Because if they continue to put up the fight cards they have on Showtime, which we have just recent, it's just not going to be a fairy tale ending, in my opinion. And like any business, even though Al Heyman has been in this advisor business for quite some time, being a promoter, it takes up to be, maybe, in my opinion, in any business, about 5 years to get off the ground. And you had told me earlier you think this has been at it at 2 years. I you know, which may be rightfully so, might be true. 2 years they've been into this game. But 3 years is a lot to play with, and there's a lot of stake in 3 years to really lose the to really lose what potential fans that were really kind of clinging back to the sport by having it on Showtime and HBO, but now just automatically taking it away from them and putting it on NBC or any another made-up channel that they feel they can create, to me, you're going to end up losing a very good large mass percentage of fans.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, let's say best case scenario, and you start to see some good-ass fights on NBC. You know, all of a sudden Keith Thurman's very active, and you get to see him regularly. And, you know, what the fight becomes among the stable, who gets those, and how many fights you're going to do, triple header on NBC, who gets those, you know? And you really, you look at what Al's got, and the knock is he hasn't developed anybody. But I really like Errol Spence. And if they can really learn how to develop him, I mean, who's the matchmaker over there? That's kind of what I'm curious to know. Is it Golden Boy? Or because, I mean, they're learning. They're getting better. They certainly make action fights. But that's, you know, Errol Spence Jr. Is a guy that, if that's Al's cornerstone, if that's his guy for the future, that's a pretty good guy. That's somebody that's got all the tools. He's got all the talent. He's certainly got the charm. He's a very good interview. Already understands that end of the game. I don't know. Best case scenario, they develop Errol Spence to a wide audience. Boxing hits the mainstream again. But I think you still need all of the other trappings. You know, you need guys, you know, a universal drug testing program. And, you know, these guys are all getting paid, but I would like to see, if you're going to monopolize it, then, you know, there's always my criticism of boxing, that it wants to be big time, it wants to be the way it used to be, but it doesn't want all the trappings of the sports that have grown into multi-billion dollar industries, such as the NFL or the NBA. They don't want, you know, and granted, those guys don't have the best drug testing in the world, but they have other things that they're developing. They have retirement plans. They're slowly starting to get it. You collected a bargaining agreement where you can help all the promoters and help develop talent. Everybody has the same kind of resources, or at least close to it, to develop talent, which overall helps the game. But, you know, this wide-open market, I don't think it's always necessarily a good thing. You know, the free market. Maybe they all should be forced to work together. Because, and I said this to you the other day, how do you have a business? How can you grow a business if there's, like, 9 different people running it to their own end? You know what I mean? Like, all the different promoters.
Too many
all are really, too many chiefs. Like, going after their own ends. That
right.
can't help the whole sport.
No.
We can only hope for good peaks and valleys at that point and you know, luck, you know, and willingness of the fighters. And now that Al's entered things, he's skewed the market to a point, and Kathy Duva pointed this out, where everybody wants, you know, 6 figures for a tune-up. And maybe they're worth it. And maybe Kathy's wrong. Kathy's not exactly the biggest proponent of drug testing in the world. It's kind of like, it's not really my business, you know? That seemed to be her attitude when she was on the show. And maybe it isn't. But I don't know. You can't worry about the Al Haymans taking over the business if you want to be all skewed like this and, you know, fractured and divided and kind of wide open to have a 49-year-old fighter fighting without random testing. But you're going to make a lot of money off of it. You know, like, I don't know. Boxing always wants its cake and eat it too.
I like cake.
So we'll see what the future brings with Al. Is it going to be another universe and the other guys are going to do their thing or what? I don't know.
This is like swatting DC versus Marvel. The worlds just collide. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598? You certainly can. Let's pass in some fight fans before we start trailing on about other things here in boxing. Let's talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's bring on area code 951. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother? Area code 951. You out there, brother? Can hear you in the back, but it's breaking up really bad. Yeah. Put him back on hold. Let's go.
Ebola got him.
Area code 787. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? I'm sorry, 787. Yeah, 787. You're on live right now. What's on your mind? Got a lot of people just tuning in. Let's go area code 860. I think that's CT. You're on live with us on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yeah, what's up? How you doing, guys?
Good, man. What's up, brother? How you doing?
All right. Do you guys know the undercard of Canelo and Claudio?
No, I haven't received any announcement from it yet, no.
Okay. And my other question was, I'm on Instagram, and I'm hearing a lot of people, you know, giving Ray Beltran a good chance against Terrence Crawford, dealing with his style that he has. What's that? I mean, like, do you guys think Beltran has a good chance, or do you think Crawford's just going to have, you know, too much versatility for him? Because,
you know what?
Beltran's face slick fighters like Hank Lundy and stuff like that before.
You know, though, here's the thing. This is what I like about Crawford, okay, is at one time we looked at him as this cutie kind of guy that had all the right tools, didn't look at him as a power puncher. This was the guy that can outbox you. But to me, it really showed that pressuring him the right way, he's going to fight. Gamboa really brought that out of him. So that tells me he's got pretty much every tool in the shed sharpened for Beltran. It's really up to Beltran and how he decides to try to fight. Because if he tries to sit back and try to box a boxer, well, we know what happens in that route. But if Beltran tries to be the mauler, which we've seen him numerous times, he did it with Burns, just go at him and try to give hands, well, he's going to be in the receiving end to a guy that's going to be willing to pitch. Not to, you know, and quarterback against him. So this makes it all for a great, interesting fight. Now, do I think Beltran has a chance? I don't think so, man, to tell you the truth. I think he's going to give a hell of a run. I think he's going to be somebody that's going to have his moments. But I think the overall of Terrence Crawford's size, his boxing ability, his IQ, and even his punch, it's going to be just a little bit too much for Beltran, in my opinion. I just think it's just going to be too much for him. When the adjustment comes there, Beltran is not going to know what to do. He's going to make the same mistake over and over, and Crawford's going to capitalize it. That's what I see in my book, Gabriel.
Damn, Dave. Leave some pizza for me, would you? Jesus. that's my same pick, what Dave said, pretty much. Yeah, I'll go one further. I'll go Terrence Crawford by late KO. I think if Beltran fights true to his character, he's going to come. And I think Crawford is – we're just barely seeing below the surface. You know, in that last fight, you know, he showed a lot. I sort of – you know, the storyline was that he was almost knocked out and then came back. I mean, I think he took a big shot. Kind of like, you know, every time like last night when Stevens would land a – you know, the few times that Stevens landed a shot on Endam, everybody go crazy, like, oh, my God, there it is, there's a big shot. But really, you know, he took, like, one and came back. I think Crawford had so much more to give. I like his power, I like his size. I like the longevity. Now, you know, Beltran, I think it would take a lot to stop him. He's a durable guy. He's been in with Manny Pacquiao for many years. But he's also a guy with a lot of miles. So it's incumbent on Crawford. If he wants to be a star, And right now is a perfect time there's a void at HBO. You've got Triple G, sure, but there isn't a guy that speaks fluent English. And I mean, granted, Triple G is incredibly quotable, and everybody just loves him. I mean, he's selling out. But Crawford could fill another void, and he's a legit draw in his in his home state. So all the signs are there. I think he needs to stop Ray Beltran if he wants to be that next level guy. Maybe even get a Manny Pacquiao fight or a Chris Algieri fight.
You know, I like the matchup too. I got to tell you this. I like the matchup because it's not going to leave any room for anybody to say, well, you know, after Gamboa, he avoided Beltran, which should have really been the guy that was up for that title belt. He's covering his bases. He's taking on he just got off a hard fight. And he's taking on another hard fight. You know, Beltran is no walk in the park. You know, this guy's a mugger at nighttime in the park you decide to walk through. So this is a good fight, man. But realistically, I think Beltran has got miles on him. He can be sometimes a bit of a one-trick pony. and that's not, I'm not meaning that in any disrespectful way, because I love Beltran. I love his style. I think he's exciting. He comes and he brings it. But and when it comes to the talent department, and if you want special effects, you got to go with Crawford. And that's who I'm going with, is Terrence.
Yeah, me too. I'm picking Crawford. And I think, you know, dealing with what we saw with Gamboa, we wanted to see how he would do against versatility. I mean, when he was against, you know, adversity, and we saw what he did. He knocked Gamboa out, and I think he's definitely a rising star. I think he can go up to 140 and definitely win the title up there as well.
And, you know, it's funny, because I had a fight fan just yesterday ask me, he's all, who I think should be a superstar, but I'm not sure if he can get to that level, is Terrence Crawford. And I said, look, if he's able to still continue to sell out the way he is in his home state, he's a superstar already in that state. He's being developed correctly. Now, taking him out of there, that's what we'll kind of find out. But it's just too early and too soon. But the way they're matchmaking him, the way they're moving him, I know myself, and I think Gabriel can agree with me on this one here, is this is the way you do it. You know, why move him out of there? I know people hate hometown advantages, but at sometimes when it's at a point of somebody's career, you have to kind of do that. Keep them where they're selling. Build that brand into this major market, and then you start shipping it out a little further away from home, and then you really see if all the strategy and the hard work you put in really is going to pay off. So I think what they're doing right now is a great way of doing things with him.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one more thing?
Go for it, brother.
Have you guys heard any opponents next for Andrade? Because I know he's calling out everybody. He's one of those guys who wants to make his shine in boxing, and nobody wants to give him a chance.
You know what? No, man. Unfortunately, I think, like, when we had him on and we talked about this, we touched on this a bit, was that Andrade is – here's a guy that has tons of talent. Is a guy that could really be a major force in that division. It's kind of showed that, you know, he's got the height, he's got the boxing ability, he's got the charisma, definitely. He's got the personality to really get people to kind of listen to what he's got to say. He proved that by being on the show. But a thing that he kind of lacks is, you know, promotional power. It sucks when you got a smaller promotional group like Star Boxing that don't have the power to go like, okay, this is what we're going to do next, and this is how we're going to move, and this is how far we're going to jump. They can't do that. When we talk about baby steps, dude, they're at that feet of only doing baby steps. And that's where it stands. So who's he going to face next? It's really not, I don't think it's up to them. It's who's willing to throw him a bone next.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel, what do you think?
Well, I think, too, they're probably up against the wall of, you know, once a guy gets to a title, I imagine contractually you're obligated to pay him X amount more, you know, exponentially more than
right.
You were before. You know, he was just a contender. So now the problem becomes they need to get him on a network in order to pay for him because they're a smaller operation. And that's what I'm talking about with boxing. It's like, sure, you've got a fighter. I mean, he has a great interview. So much fun to talk to. Totally cool. Totally willing to fight. You know, trains all year long, is what he wants to do, and he's in the prime of life, and he's a champion. Dude can't get on TV. So
here's a guy.
You know, and
here's a guy right here, Gabriel. That if he could rightfully be in justice, if he dropped this bout, and his explanation would be because this bout is preventing me from getting fights because I ain't getting paid. You know what I mean? Vice versa, what Peter Quillen did. This is a guy that could do that and get away with that.
I don't know if he could get away with it. You know, I think it would be kind of tough for him in that he's got a rough style, you know, and in terms of just he's a problem. I mean, I think the thing that he needs is to hold on to that belt until he can get something, But unfortunately, the problem is that they're not going to just do him, you know, get him off TV or do like with Triple G, with K2 did with him and just take him to Monte Carlo. We're just going to keep fighting him. We're not on HBO. Fine. We're just going to keep fighting. And you build, you know, goodwill by everybody's watching this guy. Now look at him. You take him to, you know, Carson, and he sells out standing room only. Like they've never sold like this. You know, K2's basically going, well, we can bring him back to the Staples Center. You know, now we've got a whole other market. It's going to be hard for Andrade if they don't invest in him. If they're waiting around, he's going to die on the vine. So waiting around for TV, it's unfortunate, you know.
Certainly is.
That's boxing.
CC, yeah. Thanks for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold.
Thank you.
All right, let's go. Let's go with, I believe we got Rob Riddler with us. You're on the line, Rob. What's up? What's on your mind, brother?
Yo, I'm on?
You're on.
Oh, man, dude, I was tripping out when you kept giving out the number. I was like, did I call in? Am I on? I was, like, tripping out, man. I was laughing my ass off, like, pressing buttons on my phone. It was hilarious. But, I was going to come on here and, like, ask questions about Jose Luis Ramirez. Dude, I'm wasted. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Terrence Crawford, Beltran, who is this guy? Who is that? I don't know who Beltran is. Who is this dude? Like, I looked him up. Dude, I'm so drunk. I looked him up. He has, like, 6 losses, 2 by KO. Crawford is boring. What is this?
I don't know. That's, I think it's a great fight. Maybe you have 2 months to drink, buddy. Stay away from that.
I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to hold you to that. But I didn't know Sergey Kovalev killed somebody in the ring. I didn't know this. Apparently he killed somebody, or the dude was previously damaged to the fight and killed, and, you know, Kovalev jabbed him and, like, the dude went down and was, like, shaking or something. It was kind of frozen on the ropes. It was pretty scary. Someone said Kovalev got knocked out in the amateurs in round one, and he has a suspect chin going into this Bernard Hopkins fight, and they're trying to use that as their prediction. What the hell? Dude, you might want to, like, I'll just listen in because I don't know what I'm saying, bro.
All right, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Switch your thoughts. It's all right, man. You should have seen me earlier this week.
I know. Well, we'll get into that another day. Fight fans, you want to call in?
Yeah.
You certainly can. 347-215-7598. Call in sober. Call in drunk. It doesn't matter, man. We'll take your call. And we'll hear what you got to say. Rob Riddler, Everybody Hates Mondays. He comes. He didn't spill any hate this time, Gabriel. It's kind of disappointing. You know? Thought normally he'd come on here and say.
I mean, Terrence Crawford's boring.
Oh, that's right.
No idea who Robot, but trying to. He's a little bit negative. But, you know, the young are kind of nihilists in some way. They're just a little, they have a tendency to, you know, kind of crap on everything. And then, you know, you hit 30s and you realize you're going to be dead sooner than you think, and you lighten up a little bit. 40s, you know, geez, I'm downright, you know, frolicking on a regular basis. I'm so, you know, close to death.
Little by little, chipping away here. Hey, I'll tell you what. You know, when you think of fighters, let me tell you something, man. When we see fighters come from other countries and they come out here to the States and they get their pro debut, it's always going to be one way or the other. It's going to be either he gets knocked out quick, or he walks away leaving you with the impression of, I got to see this kid again. And that kid, Miguel, Mariaga, I think it was last name. I don't think the commentators were pronouncing it. I don't think they were pronouncing it correctly, but I think it's Mariaga. I could be wrong too. But he's 27 years old. He's a super flyweight. He's out of Colombia, and he had a stoppage over just last night on Wednesday on ESPN. If you guys didn't miss it, on the special, over Chris Martin. And Chris Martin is a tough customer. You know, this is a guy that's been there with the who's and what's, you know. Now, he's not in his prime. I know he was trying to convince himself that he's better than what he once was, but this is a guy that's been known to take a good shot. This is a guy that's known to really upset and shake the card, the home fighter that's supposed to be the winner, right? He's a guy that really is a really, I would say, by far a garden gatekeeper. And the Colombian kid went in there, and he put hands on him, but it's not the way he did it. He wasn't sloppy. He wasn't wild. He was very schooled. He did something that a lot, you don't see this of late anymore, man. And it was a beautiful painting of what he was doing against Chris. He was going to the body, back to the head. When he had some distance between each other, he jabbed. You know, and it was the jab of measurement, and it also was the jab to blind Chris of trying to throw a counter shot so that he can get right back into that pocket. What he was doing, he was creating himself the room and the arm length to know exactly what he was going to do next. And the way he turned over that uppercut, Gabriel, it was a thing of beauty. Because nowadays what you see is a guy that throws an arm uppercut. There's really no body weight. They don't drop their hip, and they don't turn their leg, and they don't roll that shoulder underneath. This guy did everything pretty much soundly, in my opinion. It looked great. I loved it. I want to see more of him. And I think that whoever, as seen he's with Coach Rubios, I don't know how much he's inputted in him, but you can see he's a very well-schooled fighter. He's got some minor flaws, but right now he left a great impression over me where I'm saying, wow, I want to see this kid again. What were your thoughts?
Oh, no. Yeah, I was right there with you. I was really impressed. It was workmanlike. You know, he just really got to the body early. I thought Martin looked, a little heavier a foot than I've ever seen him. I wonder what his conditioning was really like, because he seemed to be kind of wanting to stand and trade a little bit more, kind of rest on the ropes, and I hoped just kind of looking around for the edges of the fight, you know, which is not something he's usually, you know, on his toes doing that, not kind of sliding more on his heels doing that. Instead, the body work just really paid off. And, yeah, then the uppercut. I mean, he looked nice. It was definitely that. It was like, that was impressive and it was entertaining. I want to see more of it.
Yeah, I want to see where they go with him. I like I said, you know, just for his pro debut here in America, and getting in there, with Chris Martin, most guys, in my opinion, with them shots that were landing, and he really painted the brush. He went from body to head, head to body. He made sure that he gave you different angles every time out. And every shot that he threw had conviction behind it. And it just left me going like, man, if it was any other guy that was in there besides Chris, they would have been gone. They would have been laid out. But Martin showed, you know, Martin showed that he's got a real chin. He's a tough customer. He's got will to stay in there, and he really did try to make a comeback. Whether or not he wasn't up on anyone's scorecard. I don't think I gave him any round out of that fight. But he really left that, you know, I'm here to try to make something happen. And luckily, the referee finally saw that this guy is just too tough for his own good. Stepped in, stopped it in that sixth round. But you know, where Chris goes, I think he could always do something well with somebody else that's just not going to be Miguel. Miguel's just, you know, he's sharp. He's ready. He's in his prime. They need to take advantage of him right now. This outing that he just had last night could have scared a lot of other super featherweights, in my opinion. So we'll have to see where the luck of the Irish for him goes with.
Yeah, I think out of everything there, you know, sorry, I was on the mute. I think everything there last night, you know, he was the most impressive thing. Although I liked the venue, it seemed like they brought out a lot of celebrities, which is never a bad thing for the sport. Overall, it just looked like a fun night at the fights. Good environment. It seemed like a good vibe off of everybody that was coming, you know, that came out to see him. SoCal, it has been revitalized in the last few years, and it's, I think when you do start taking it to the major cities, but then you start to see, you know, what Terrence Crawford is, they're trying to build with him at home. Adrian Bronner is another guy that is potentially a great hometown draw. That just shows that it's healthier than it's been in a long time in this business. You know, this business has been in this country. It's healthier than it's been in a long time. And it's good, you know, despite all its weird little issues.
All right, man, let's talk about Stevenson here. When in Dam, you know what? Just like with Jesse Brinkley showed that if you got movement and you can box and you can stay disciplined, you're going to get pretty far against Curtis. Curtis looked, I want to say he looked puzzled, man. I couldn't sit back and say that, but he definitely did not, I don't think he was prepared to see a guy that was going to move, jab, be as slick as he was, be not too committed on his punches. I mean, he was throwing some solid punches, but he threw them all at the right moment. The timing was there for him. He did, you know, he did get clipped here and there, but it wasn't enough where Curtis could really put hands on him, put ham on him, and drop him and get the victory. Instead, he got caught himself. He was dropped with a perfectly timed straight right while he was throwing his. And at the end of the day, I think it's safe to say that Stevenson's always going to be an exciting guy with the right opponent in front of him.
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, but he's got to have a guy that cooperates. And you know, in Endem, I mean, I thought he fought a very smart fight. And I think if you look at the Quillen fight, you know, Quillen dropped him a ton of times, but it styles, you know, make fights. And it's also, you know, just kind of the physical matchups, it plays into it as well. And Quillen is a taller guy, so they're kind of on equal footing. Whereas Stevens was caught on the outside, and, you know, he didn't have the quick upper body movement. He didn't have the quick double jab to get inside like he needed to be, you know, utilizing the whole fight in order to get going. When he did do it and press the issue with Endam, things were good for him, you know, with the exception of the time he got clipped with a right that he didn't see coming, because he kind of pulled off to the side, you know, pulled off to his own right, and just really telegraphed. Everything was telegraphed all night, with very few exceptions. That eighth round, it's kind of late when, you know, Stevens tried to go for it, but it was just too little too late. And Dan proved that, you know, you can have a loss and you can learn from it and still fight quality after that and have a quality, you know, put forth a quality game plan. You got good shots in there. I think he hit Stevens and used his jab early on. Both those things were, he was hitting hard enough with them to get respect and keep it all throughout the fight. I think it was very well done by him. And it's, you know, I was kind of watching it thinking, you know, we were talking about it on TNR that this fight had championship implications. And it's nice to see a guy want to work his way back into contention like Stevens. You know, fans are idiots when they trash the guy. I don't want to ever see him mention Triple G or a rematch or anything again. Why? I mean, if you fail in your business, do you have to, like, you know, never talk about doing well in that business ever again? Or do you get to keep trying? I mean, that's why we like these guys, right? It's because they get hit and they keep coming. Stevens will be back. I mean, he's limited, but he's not, like, you know, he's not crap. He's given us some good fights. He gave Triple G a nice test before he got stopped. Serviceable guy. But end to end, I was thinking, you know, this might actually be better for boxing. Here's a legitimate guy that, you know, yeah, he lost to Peter Quillen. Maybe Quillen, his stock rises as Endam moves along further in his career. If he makes his way to the title shot after, you know, now he makes his way, you know, towards the IBF title in the winner of, you know, Taylor Solomon. If he can be in the mix there, if it's not Taylor and it's not Heyman controlled, then Solomon versus Endam, that's a very winnable fight for him. And then after that, who knows? Maybe he's got a shot at Triple G. He's got an excellent style. He's got good size and apparently respectable power. So it was a good night for boxing last night, I think, you know, in terms of its future with him in the middleweight division.
Here's something to point out, and I think what a lot of folks forget is that body types make a big difference. And what I mean by that, when Endam got in with Peter Quillen, look at the tall lankiness that Peter Quillen has. You know, he's got a different body type than Stevenson. Stevenson's more of a short, stockier, heavier, muscle-bound type of fighter. So mobility is really not in his favor. It's not in his favor at all. Where Quillen could be on his feet. He's able to dart in a little quicker. You know, he's more athletic. Not saying that Curtis isn't, but it takes up a little bit more. It's that short stature. He's more compact. And the reason he's more compact, he's got to be on both his feet planted to land those big, heavy shots. You got to be there in front of him to land those big, heavy shots. Where Quillen, he's tall, lanky. He could be off balance, but it still works for him. Same thing with Endam. His body type was what savored him. It saved him from being in a tough war and catching himself between those ropes where Stevenson could have got off and hurt him. But the possibility of that not happening was the body type. He's a lot taller, a lot lankier. He's able to have more movement because there's not a lot of muscle there to hold him down. I hear this a lot from a lot of folks. They say, why does Canelo get tired? Look at his legs, very large. He's a bigger kid, fighting in a smaller weight division. He's starving himself to make this weight. And a lot of times, our muscle, it just conserves a lot more energy than a lean type of muscle. So that's something that you have to look at, and you're looking, especially if you're in the ring. If you're a fighter, an amateur fighter, and you're looking to go pro, you got to look at your body type. There's reasons why you don't lift weights. There's reasons why you don't do certain types of exercises. I know Gabriel can attest to this. The more muscle you have, the more energy you're going to absorb. Gabriel?
I'm so muscular, Dave. I'm exhausted all the time. It's just, you know, I just can't get anywhere. I just need so much sleep.
Well, it's those shades. You got those big shades, you know what I mean? You got to have a really strong back and shoulders and neck to carry those big shades.
It's true. It's true. Well, I've been doing yoga. I'm trying to build it up, you know, get that headstand going.
There you go. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Let's go open up the phone lines here. Let's go with area code 714. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
What's up, guys?
What's up, brother? Who are we talking to?
This is Joe from the Bay Area. Great show so far, man. Great show. Hey, so
appreciate
December,
it.
Beginning of December, you know, we're going to have two good cards. I think, you know, that Canelo Plotty. And then the following week, Tim Bradley with Chavez. Do you guys know about that undercard? Top Rank supposedly wants to make it a triple hitter for that night.
I've just heard about it. I haven't heard if they brought up any names in terms of who's going to be as that third name. I think the more or less if anybody would have known and threw it out there would have been Steve Kim. But right now I haven't heard anything back from that. How about you, Gabriel?
Yeah, I'm retired, so no, I haven't heard anything just yet. And when I was active, I didn't return my calls all the time. So check in maybe next Monday, we'll have announced something. There's no shame in my game, Dave. You know, I'm on hiatus. I'm chilling.
Yeah, I noticed that, man, big time. But you almost forgot that you're on hiatus just the other day when I told you, and you were like, I'm going to look into that. I said, no, you can't do that. Yeah, but Joe, you know what? That is a really good card. I like the Timothy Bradley and Chavez fight card. Hopefully that fight doesn't get too messy, and they have the right ref. They have the right ref for that fight. But Timothy Bradley, in my opinion, he's going to be in there really rough with a rough customer in Chavez. Chavez throws some really awkward shots. But if Timothy Bradley was able to get past Arbogu, he should be able to get past Chavez. What do you think, Gabriel?
I think this could be an ugly fight. It could be a real ugly fight, you know. But, you know, I think Tim's shown that he can be gotten to by a boxer puncher. So it's going to be incumbent on Chavez to develop coming underneath, you know, really work at uppercuts, taking a step back and catching Tim, blinding him maybe with a jab to get him to go down, and then, boom, come up with the uppercut and really work that game, slide around to the side, get a body shot in around on Tim. It's an intriguing fight. I haven't really made a pick in it. I lean towards Tim. I like his versatility. I like his skill and his ability to smother your offense. And Chavez is a little more one-dimensional in that regard. But really, really good fight.
We got anything else for you, Joe?
No, that will do it. Thank you, brother.
All right, thanks for calling in, man. You know what? I got to tell you this, though, man. Talking about Timothy Bradley, what taking on this fight with Chavez here is, the only thing that kind of leaves me wondering is how Timothy Bradley's mind frame is. Coming off his second loss loss with Manny Pacquiao and the injuries. Not a second loss, I'm sorry. Just the loss of Manny Pacquiao and the injuries that he had sustained with his legs. And it's the second time around. That's what I mean. Second time around, he's having some injuries in his body, okay? His body has been kind of betraying him in some type of frame. It might be the way because the way he trains, he puts on extra pressure on himself. There's a lot of stress there, and to get himself correctly in fine-tuned fighting shape. So that being said, I want to know where his head is at, if whether or not his head's going to be in the game of being the boxer that we saw him look great against Marquez, or he tried to do exactly what he tried to do with Pobokla, which is try to fight and brawl. There's a strong possibility he may do that because he could feel a little slighted. Just the fact that fight fans have probably written him off, and he's always had that tug of war. He's had that love and hate relationship with the fight fans out there. So I'm curious about that. But like I said, I still think that If he's able to handle a very big, awkward Carlos Abagul, I think he should be able to handle a Diego Chavez. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's take another caller here. Let's go with area code 408. You're on live right now on Leaving Ring. What's on your mind? 408, you out there? No? Okay, let's go with caller 111. You're on the line right now. What's on your mind? Okay, I think really quick, if you haven't had a chance to check out The Hurt Business, the second episode that me and Gabriel and myself had produced and made out there in Riverside, California, get a chance to check it out. It's on our YouTube channel. And really what it is just covering the behind the scenes, the business of boxing. We went out there and spoke to Henry Ramirez, the trainer. That's on the first episode. Then we had a chance to talk to Indian Willie, who's the cut man. And really got down and dirty with him about the cut man business, things behind there that is dislikes and things that he thinks needs to be changed, and what he does, what big part that he has in the corner on a fight night. So if you had a chance, check that out. Got a lot of great reception for the Michael Carbo Hall interview that we had on last week. Brian Fogg was able to touch a little bit on the case that is stemming with his brother, the ongoing thing that's going on with his brother and the grandson of Danny Carbo Hall out there in Arizona. He was on a fight card, I believe, this past Friday. Things are going down over there in Arizona. So Brian Fogg wrote up the record of what's been going on in that family and touched a little bit of what Michael Carbo Hall had to say here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Did I lose you, Gabriel? Are you still out there, brother?
I'm still here. I'm just moving around. And this these headphones are a little sensitive, so if I move just a little bit, it sounds like I'm mugging somebody.
Hey, so Zab Judah and Mauricio Herrera turned down $500,000 to go to Russia to face Ruslan Provokhov. What's your thoughts about that, man? What do you think?
Well, that's a hard sell, man. Would you go to Russia to fight Ruslan Provodnikov?
You know what?
How much money would it take you to do that? If nobody else is offering you $500,000 to $1 million, I think Zab tweeted out that, somebody was erroneously saying that he turned down $1 million. I think he'd go for the million. I don't know if he'd go for the 500. And I don't know if he should go. Nothing's going to be in your favor.
That's what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? This is basically, in my opinion, more of a setup than a real setup of a great fight happening. Where's the neutral corner in this fight? Obviously, Ruslan, probably his feeling, and I'm pretty sure his handler's feelings are, well, we're not having the neutral corner be here in the States. And they want to be able to give back to where he comes from, obviously. Try to give back a little bit to the European side and get fans out there to come out to see, I would say, the star power that he has, to offer out there, the way the Klitschko's have. I don't know if he can pull something like that, but I think they're kind of curious of whether or not how much star power he has back in Europe. So Mauricio Herrera and Zab Judah saying no to the $500K. I don't know. I can't be mad about it, because I think too with Mauricio Herrera, I think where he's at, and I could be wrong about this, but I think where he's at is, why can Mike 500K be in here in the States? Are you faking on your own again?
I am. Well, I think, sorry, I just got like a kind of a crazy ass text.
That guy's still bugging you? That dude's still texting you?
No, not that guy. Somebody actually of note.
I was like, didn't you out him out already? He's still trying to act like he.
A report: Don King is liable for Jones's failed drug test. I guess is what the headline is. A U.S. District Court judge has ruled that Hall of Fame promoter Don King is liable for breach of contract after his fighter Guillermo Jones tested positive for furosemide for the second consecutive fight, according to Reuters. Promoters Andre Rabinsky and Vladimir Hurunov sued King for $2.5 million in damages after the April 25th fight between Jones and Denis Lebedev was scrapped, with the fighters both in their dressing rooms preparing to fight. actual damages are to be determined. Interesting.
Mm. Well, yep, the big news is Kung Lee being popped to catch him with HGH. He blamed it on being in the sauna, saying that he was a bit there too long, right?
I think that was it was kind of erroneous. Some people were throwing the sauna thing out there, but he actually did have on MMA Junkie, had a great, very well-worded defense and statement given. And you know, I've been kind of working on this all day. Really, since it came out yesterday, I've been kind of just looking around and asking certain people questions. And I don't want to scoop myself, but I will say this. His statement and the things that are surrounding it. Normally when drug tester guy tests positive for drugs, they will attack the chain of custody, or they'll attack the system in some way, or the organization that did the testing. In Kung Lee's case, there was testing that was just conducted by the UFC, but the lab that did the HGH test that was performed on him, their procedures, they weren't a WADA-accredited lab, for one. And so they didn't really follow the policy for – this is from what I'm gathering. There were a couple different sources and working on my third one, and then I'll probably write up something and get it published somewhere, probably not in your normal boxing circles. But from what I'm understanding, they didn't do the right procedure for taking an HGH sample on a couple levels.
Mm.
And it's a test that the science is kind of out on it, and it is very particular about when you take the sample, how you take the sample, all that stuff. It's never as simple. You know, I saw boxing writers throwing out there, here's this guy working with Conte, and again, and where's the outrage, and all this BS. And, like, be a reporter. Be thorough. If you remember, in the spring of 2012, when I was, you know, first knocking out all these positives, but I was 25 stories in about anti-doping, or roughly like 18 to 20, somewhere in there maybe. But I was already well-versed in this subject. All my pieces, even though I was tweeting out the results and people were running and chasing down the story, my pieces always came out a little bit later because they're a little more thorough, several sources, respected sources. I don't care what any of these people say. And I've seen some pretty terrible things said about me the last couple of days, as if I did something or Victor Conte did something. But, yeah, I'll have something up, Dave. It's a very interesting case. And last night, my feeling was different. And then when Kung Lee's statement came out today and all the investigative stuff I started to do and different studies I've been looking at, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up suing the UFC for this. But it depends on how he feels, I think, you know, what he thinks the damage done to him. You know, they slapped him with 9 months, and then they came back around and slapped him with a year. But I really don't think he got due process. He also mentioned that he wanted to contest the results, and the lab had thrown away his sample. And that's not WADA procedure. I believe positives are supposed to be kept for like 10 years or something like that. So there's a lot of things that Kung Lee's team is already within from, you know, it being announced yesterday. And that also is called into question. Why did it take so long to announce it? But from yesterday to today, a lot has happened. That's a hot story right there, and it could blow up in the UFC's face.
Wow, yeah, that is crazy. Hey, let's pull up our fight schedule here because we're almost up with the show here. We're gonna patch in a call right now while Gabe was looking up the fight schedule. Let's patch in caller. Area code 559, you're on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Cali Loops on Twitter.
Cali Loops, what's up, brother?
Show.
Thank you, man. What's on your mind, bro?
I want to see if you guys caught that fight, that Stevens Ndom fight. And,
yeah.
You know, do you think Ndom deserves a title shot just because he beat Stevens? Yeah.
Well, I think, can we sell it because he won against Stevens? But, I mean, even... You know, Sam Solomon deserved it. He went to the jaws of Germany. But
that's their thing on ESPN yesterday. He's getting a title shot. I'm like, what, already?
I mean, that's just kind of how the ratings work, you know? Yeah, I mean, you kind of come out of nowhere. You get beat by Peter Quillen, and then you come back around and you beat Stevens. It's just the way the rankings work is just – that's why I kind of always laugh at the fantasy rankings, you know, these guys that get, oh, we got mentioned on Friday Night Fights. It's not how the rankings work. There is no right way that they should work. I mean, there is, but that's just never been how it works, you know?
What?
It's not really about earn or deserve in boxing. It's about business
right.
relationships, personal relationships. And I literally had a guy pretty high up in the business just last week telling me, and we were just off record, but he was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, this is how it works. I present a fighter that I've, you know, maybe know a guy who's developed and he's good. After I've seen him and know he's quality, I'll suggest him to a sanctioning body. And then from there, you know, that person will say, well, what if I sanctioned this fight and that would give you X ranking? And then maybe in two or three fights, he'd be here and then here. Would that be okay? Guy's like, yeah, that's great. Thanks so much. You know, and everybody's going to get paid along the way. So they okay it. That's how rankings work, not by any sort of merit, really.
Hey, so
it's kind of shocking.
What do you think is fight of the year so far?
Right now, I think the one that sticks out in my head is the Salcedo fight. I think that was a great fight. There was a lot of back and forth, a lot of exchanges. I think right now that's the one that really stands out. I know you have a fighter of the year, Gabriel. I remember you telling me already who your fighter of the year. You want to let that cat out of the bag yet?
What? I don't even remember. What?
Oh, yeah, told
Andre
me.
Ward?
No. You said you want me to say it? You want me to say who you had told me who's going to be fighter of the year in your opinion?
Yeah.
Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, that's right. Yes. That's right. He's comeback fighter of the year.
Comeback fighter of the year.
Yeah.
My bad.
Because I think, you know, if I was still writing or if I was going to write, I would write that piece that he is the comeback fighter of the year because he, by deciding, hey, wait a minute, this is my company, I'm the golden boy. I was whatever we want to say about Oscar and people say all this stuff about his personal life, we don't really get into all that. I deal with the business and people's personal lives and their sex lives, whatever, man. Everybody's a freak at some level. So I don't, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is, you know, if you're good at it. But in terms of business, Oscar woke up and took the reins and he carried this sport on his back for a long time when there wasn't anybody else around. And he took the tough fights when he needed to. He's not like Floyd. He fought Felix Trinidad. He fought Corte. He fought, you know, everybody. So, I think him coming back has really changed the sport. It's opened things back up. Him taking everything to HBO or taking, you know, Canelo over to HBO, really smart move. He just seems to have a clear vision, you know, and it's nice to see. So, yeah, he's definitely my comeback fighter of the year.
Well, and
I think the sport's better when Oscar's doing well.
Hey, I tell you what, it also shows that the way he was in the ring where he showed no fear, like taking on like Bernard Hopkins, you know, taking on guys that like Fernando Vargas at one time, where a lot of folks that thought that Fernando Vargas was just going to mow right through him. He's brought that in his business swabby. He's kind of shown that he's not afraid. You know, as soon as Schaefer and Al Haymon were in full view of what they were doing, this wasn't a guy that put his tail between his legs and said, oh, well, screw it. You know, these guys are business guys. They're going to swallow me. He, you know, he put up his hands and said, let's go, toe-to-toe. Let's do this. You know, he's not afraid to lose. And that's something that he's really showing. That character of his fighter mentality, is really shining through, in my opinion. So I got to agree with you on the comeback here. And speaking about being freaky in the bedroom, absolutely right, dude. I wear socks during sex still. You know what I mean? That's got to be freaky, you know?
Yeah. Everybody tripped out on, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. He's wearing the pink chonies. I'm like, dude, sometimes you got to put on a show, you know? I mean, you know, you're a little tired or you can confuse them with the pink chonies to think that you're better than you are. I mean, whatever.
Wasn't pink chonies, though, dude. That was Julio trying to do his own laundry, and he put in his soccer red shirt in the washer with his pants on this, and it came out pink and stuff. That's just his way of showing that, you know what, he shouldn't do any laundry. He shouldn't cook for himself. This is a kid with a silver spoon in his mouth his whole time. Anyways, hey, brother, Kelu, thanks for calling in, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Hey, speaking about that HBO contract with Canelo, why are they calling that such a historical signing? I mean, is it any better than the Mayweather Showtime CBS?
I think they use the word historic. It's like, well, it's not lying because, you know, it's the first time it's ever happened that he's gone back to HBO. So it is kind of historic.
Okay.
it's
not like
it's
UFC,
just promoter speak, you know what I mean?
It's
just public.
It's not like UFC calls everything historic, making history. Like, I'm like, how is this making history? A girl's going to fight I don't know. I'm tired of
UFC. You know, out of the year, to answer your question, yeah, that's a tough one. You know, there's this fight that I always, you know, forget, and I always put it on the, it's on the side, and I haven't watched it. That makes me a terrible boxing writer. But besides that, I mean, you know, you look at Salido versus Cookie at Gym. That was a pretty awesome rumble, you know, just a while back. Takayama Rodriguez was pretty awesome. Trying to think what else this year. You know,
I tell you what. There's another fight of the year for me, but it was a four-rounder. And I was telling you this. I saw it live. It was in Modesto, California. I tried to talk to the promoter, but the dude just, I don't know, whatever, for whatever reason, I asked him, I said, hey, man, you think I could host it so our listeners can see this? I mean, this was a real fight. It was back and forth. It wasn't sloppy. Both were good technicians. They were both from Modesto clubs. There was some rivalry between these. No, I'm sorry. It was Modesto. It was a Modesto club and a Stockton club. So there was real rivalry between these two guys. And the crowd, I swear to you, there was almost a riot during the fight. That's how emotionally invested the people were in this fight. I can't remember the kid's name. I'll look it up, man. Go ahead, brother.
Hey, Stockton is no joke. I'm from Fresno, man, and I know about Stockton, man. They love the fighter with him.
Oh, yeah, bro. I mean, the Stockton people that were there, I'm telling you, man, there was like, because the guys that were there representing Modesto were from Paradise, which, if you know Modesto, Paradise is like a miniature Stockton, you know. It's a bunch of hoods, a lot of roughnecks come out of there, and then you had Stockton. But there was real rivalry between these guys, and these two dudes went in there, and I got to tell you, they represented their city. They went in there and they left everything in that ring. It was the four best rounder out of the year, in my opinion. But
hey,
I can't
try to
show
find
it.
The name so I can YouTube it. I need to YouTube that one.
I will. You know what? I'll post it up. I'll say the name. I got to look for it. I got it written down, man. I'll throw it out there tonight. I know I have it on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, I have a picture of it. And I did mention that it was the best four rounder I've ever witnessed for this year.
What's your Instagram?
Leave it in the ring. Leave it in the ring. Right. It's the same thing like my Twitter. Leave it in the ring. Well, it's LiitRboxing. All right, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Peace. Thanks.
That was a great fight, man. And it sucked that the promoter was like, let me think about it. I was like, what is it to think about, dude? You know, you're not a known promoter. They're called New World Promotions.
Everybody in this business is just like, maybe I can
take it. I don't know.
Maybe, do something for myself with it.
And I even told the dude, I was like, look, I'm doing you a big favor. You're not doing anything for me. I just wanted to show that it was a great fight. It was a great night of fights, to tell you the truth. It was held in Modesto. Great night of fights. So everybody walked away really feeling like this was fantastic. If you could do this all over again, all four fights on those cards were great. They, you know, was plenty of action, but that one fight there was the one that stood out. There was so much action. It was really fun to watch. And guess this, the world's not going to be able to see it. Too bad. Anyways, anyways,
can
fight
we go
fans,
with the fight schedule?
Yeah, let's go with that fight schedule.
Saturday, October 4th, Foxwoods Resort, Mashantucket, Connecticut, Showtime, an Al Haymon special. This is another thing that Kathy was talking about. It's interesting in the article that, you know, the cards she was doing, and they're not going to do this anymore, but it was kind of hard to put all their best talent into stuff because, you know, their contract had expired after all this good faith and good fighters that they built on NBC in this short period of time. They were the successful test pilots for this. You know, it's been taken over by Al Haymon because he just outbid them, you know, and so consequently, I think we're getting a little bit of that on this card. Kind of this, here's like the lame stuff because I'm saving all the rest for when I start doing NBC. With that said, headlining is Rancis Bartholomew versus Fernando David Saucedo, super featherweights. 12 rounds. Vonis Martirosyan versus Willie Nelson, could be an interesting fight. Junior middleweights, 10 rounds. Chad Dawson versus Tommy Carpensi. Light heavyweights, 10 rounds. And Khabib Suleimanov versus Jonathan Guzman, featherweights, 8 rounds. And then later that evening in Los Mochis, Mexico, and I believe this was just picked up by the BN Network, Televisa, Johnny Gonzalez versus Jorge Arce, featherweight, 12 rounds for Gonzalez's WBC title. You know, this one's like for old time's sake or something. It's a strange fight, but I'm going to watch it. Shindo Go versus Erly Mustino, flyweight, for Go's WBC title. And then Bahia Shrine Temple in Orlando, Florida, on Unumas. Felix Verdejo versus Sergio Villanueva, lightweight in action. Gamalier Rodriguez versus Charlie Serrano, featherweights. And Esquiva Falco versus Austin Markham, middleweights in action. And rounding out the day on there, you've got First Direct Arena in Leeds, England on Sky Sports, Josh Warrington versus David Dielli, Ricky Burns versus Leonardo Esteban Gonzalez, Brian Rose versus Juan Manuel Bonanni, Tyron Nurse versus David Ryan, and Callum Smith versus the dreaded TBA. Rounding out the day is Channel 5 UK's from Glow Blue Water, England, Bob Ajisafe versus Travis Dickinson, and for his Ajisafe's British title. And Chakib Fadli versus Lenny Dawes, junior welterweight, 12 rounds. And there you go. Oh, you know what? There's one more because we come back on a Thursday. Next Wednesday, October 8th, Sam Solomon, Jermaine Taylor from the Beau Rivage, hopefully not Triage, Resort and Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, ESPN2. Sam Solomon, Jermaine Taylor, middleweights, 12 rounds for Solomon's IBF title. We'll all try to forget that Jermaine Taylor had a brain bleed before. We'll just forget that and enjoy this fight, I guess. Andre Duro versus Nick Brinson and super middleweights, 10 rounds. Yeah, he's also out on bail for shooting his cousin, allegedly. This is boxing. So, what a wonderful sport. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
Do you guys had a chance? You have a chance to watch the Mayorga comeback, Samuel Peters and Yodi Boy Campos. Did you have a chance to check that out?
I caught Sam Peter. I couldn't bring myself to watch the other ones. I just couldn't do it. Jeez.
Dude, I gotta tell you, I didn't even recognize Sam Peters. I was like, is that him? Holy smokes, poor guy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, that was. He just looked bad. He looked fat. He just. Is grim.
Really out of shape. Mayorga looked like Mayorga. He went out there, did his thing. You know what? He's always exciting, though, man. Regardless, he's really down the hill. Probably he's never going to get another big marquee fight. But I got to tell you the truth. I still am very curious when Mayorga steps in the ring. It doesn't matter what he does. I want to hear what he has to say and what he's about to do. He's never been the most polished guy in the world, but he's been very entertaining, really entertaining. And he definitely, it wasn't that much entertainment in his last fight there with that really quick KO. But, you know, what did you expect? It wasn't going to be no boxy clinic type of deal. But it was just going to be a Mayorga's moment. And that's what you end up getting. Anyways, fight fans, thanks for calling in. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, every Monday night, you got the next round with Steve Cannon and Gabriel Montoya. You got Tuesday night, you got Boxeo Tijuana Radio. That's on the mobile app. And then you got Thursday night, Leaving the Ring Radio. Don't forget to check out The Hurt Business. The second episode is out on our YouTube. It's Ending Willie. We had a really in-depth interview with him about the hand wraps, about what a cut man's supposed to do in the corner, what the no's and the do's and the you shouldn't get involved in as a cut man. So all that is covered. Check out the first episode of The Hurt Business with Henry Ramirez. Don't forget to check out Brian Fogg's article about the ongoing case with Michael Carbajal and Danny Carbajal. Actually, it's more about Danny Carbajal, what he's doing. Kind of screwed up. That guy, man, that's something else to talk about back on Leaving the Ring and whenever we get a chance to get Michael Carbajal on and we do a little bit more of our vigilance and check it all out. Anyways, thanks for calling in. Don't drink and drive. You will spill your beer. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy it with your family. Gable, till next week, brother. I will talk to you then.
Peace.